Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom, where we examine the art and science of games. We got a great cast for you tonight. We're going to be talking to the creators of the recent hit, The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker, a FMV-styled game where you have to solve a mystery. For those of you who saw my interview regarding her story, it is along those lines. And we're going to talk about the unique challenges and considerations of the design tonight with the people behind it. So, please welcome for the Aveke Studios, Linda and Tim Coles.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. It's great to have the two of you on tonight. How are you two doing today?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, we're very excited to be here.
Yes.
First of all, congratulations on the critical success of Dr. Decker. For those of you listening to this cast right now, we are recording this end of June. We are right now in peak Steam summer sale. And Dr. Decker, I believe, did that come out, was that end of May or early June?
May 19th.
Got it. Yeah, so I've been seeing a lot of positive buzz about it. I know there's been a lot of people on YouTube and Twitch playing it. So definitely congratulations on the success on that front.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been great. I mean, there's been loads of people playing it on Twitch and YouTube, and it's been really nice to watch them play it and have a lot of fun with it. Yeah,
It's definitely a good game for streamers, I think, because you can get quite good audience participation, obviously. Mm-hmm. Everybody joining in and asking questions.
Definitely. And having real actors instead of just like anime figures, I think, does add like a very interesting dimension to the game. It's when I spoke, I can't believe I forget his name, the developer of Her Story, we talked about how much, I'm sorry?
Sam Barlow.
Thank you. I hope Sam's not listening to this either. Sorry about that, Sam. But when I spoke to Sam, we also talked about how a game like Her Story, you really get like a different feel to it when there are live actors versus just watching like animation stills or just an animated character.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think the nature of both Her Story and Dr. Decker, it's very intimate, really, between mm-hmm. the player and even though in Her Story, you know, it was archive footage, but you still felt very close to Viva Seffert as she was speaking and really drew you in. And I think a lot of people have said that about Dr. Decker as well, because the characters are talking mm-hmm. directly to you. The director camera is very intimate, and it really puts the player in the room with them.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
That was our intention anyway.
All right, and we are going to be talking more about the design of Dr. Decker probably in the next few minutes. But since this is both of yours' first time on the Perceptive Podcast, for people listening who may have heard of the Aveke Studios, could you talk a little bit about yourselves and kind of your background when it comes to the game industry?
Yeah, I can take that one. Yeah, I mean, the Aveke Studios started about 14 years ago. And we originally put multimedia DVDs into murder mystery party box games, mm-hmm. which were being sold on the high street. So since then, we've continued making those kind of murder mystery games with the video elements in. And really, this is quite a natural progression for us to try and do a video game. We've also been playing FMV games for, mm-hmm. well, much longer than that. Started with Tex Murphy, the Hundred King Moon in the 90s, and got progressively worse from then onwards. So we've got quite a history of games and gaming. We regularly play multiplayer games all the time as well. So the company itself mainly produces murder mystery party games that you'd run at home, so kind of box games. And mm-hmm. actually, we're very big over here, and we're just starting to come over there. So if you were to go to Amazon.com and have a look for Dear Becky Studios, you're going to start to see some of the those traditional titles coming through. Even those games that we produce there, it might seem irrelevant, but basically the flexible party games that we produce in a box, some of that technology is in Decker. to have a random killer. So, you know, most video games can be mocked up with dice and paper. Do you know what I'm saying? And then they can progress to that version. So that's where we come from anyway.
Interesting. And the whole FMV genre in of itself, that is another like major topic that I don't think we have the time to fully get into tonight, but it is one that, again, I grew up playing a lot of those games. I grew up from like the, I'm sure you two know like who like Tom Zito was, like the whole FMV action genre of the 90s kind of thing.
No.
He did, his whole studio was built on FMV driven games. So he did games like Sewer Shark. Basically, like, anything like FMV, like very 80s, 90s cheese kind of acting, that was probably would have been from his studio during the 90s.
I mean, I think we missed out on the whole, was it the Sega had a lot of FMV titles, didn't it? And we played on PC.
We started from the PC, really. Yeah. Well, so then, it was Phantasmagoria.
Oh, yes. Well, fortunately, then you two dodged a lot of bullets, then, at least on that front. But, yeah, when it came... But yeah, of course, the PC, especially the adventure genre, really made use of FMVs, especially during the 90s era. I think for a lot of people listening, the one game that has become synonymous with that would be like Myst, which was like one of like the first games that kind of blew up along those lines.
Yeah, definitely. We did play some of that.
Yeah, we didn't actually play through all of it, did we?
Me neither. I used the guide, went back in the day to like just like kind of cheat my way through because I was never going to solve that on my own. I would still be playing it right now.
So I think we sunk a lot of hours in Diablo in the early time.
Yeah, I know the feeling for that. And for those of you listening to this cast, I know they just released the Diablo 3. They just added in the Necromancer class back into that game, which by the time you are listening to this cast for real, I will probably have spent who knows how many hours playing that class when the time comes.
Yeah, I've completed Diablo 3, but not the expansions.
Maybe we can play it sometime. Who knows? But, Now, with Diaveke Studios, you said a few minutes ago, Tim, that you start out with kind of like the murder mystery, like the box, like tabletop games. What kind of like led you guys to moving into making something like Dr. Decker?
I think we've been wanting, we wanted to do it for a long time. But, I mean, essentially, we really loved those kind of early FMV games where you could explore as well as getting those FMV responses. So I'm talking about things like Under a Killing Moon, Phantasmagoria to some extent, Days Within, Gabriel Knight. So what we saw recently, and you've mentioned one of the titles already, things like Her Story, Contradiction were kind of starting to pave the way that we didn't need an army of developers to do this, really, that you didn't need to render loads of 3D environments to walk around, open drawers and look at letters, that you could get a lot of content and creativity into just a very minimal interface, which is what, which is kind of, I mean, again, Sam Barlow won't be listening, I'm sure, but Her Story is a very minimal interface. And it's one of the catalysts probably which made us think we can do this. You know, we've got the film background, we've got the murder mystery background. We also, I didn't mention that Diaveke Studios is obviously a games company, but personally, I've been coding since a very early age. For some seriously sick stuff like Oracle, and I've come all the way from there through various programming languages, along with my brother, and he actually programmed this for us. So we have the technical background, we have the film background, and obviously the writing background. So we just stuck them all together.
It was something we wanted to do, and it got, and we had the, we felt like we had the skills to do it, or at least some of the experience to do it, in terms of writing games and filming stuff. And it just, the Her Story and the Contradiction and, was sort of the catalyst to say, well, yeah, no, maybe the time is right and we could do it. So we just started thinking up ideas.
Yeah, it certainly changed our heads that you didn't need to have this 3D environment completely rendered that you walked around in. Those games work very well without that.
Definitely. And as you said, with a game like Her Story, like, it's not really that complicated in terms of design or generally in terms of the technology that's needed, but it's another one of those great examples of how you can do a lot with very little. And greater, it's basically greater than the sum of its parts in terms of the story that's trying to tell.
Absolutely, and it got a lot of critical acclaim because of that. I mean, it's a very elegant game mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, its simplicity, but the depth that is in it, that you start playing it and you start looking for responses and it draws you in to the story.
Definitely saying it was simplistic is how I got my brother interested in coding it. If I told him it was going to be a massive job, he'd never have looked at it. So, yeah, like you say, the actual interface itself, there's not loads and loads of screens in Her Story, are there?
No. And again, a lot of it is simply just watching the archive footage, but it really puts the focus on the player to essentially really solve like a mystery. Like, it's not laid out in the sense that a linear series of events, you play the game from A to Z and you win. It's more about how much does the player pick up on certain cues or certain clues and then explore that line of questioning.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the kind of thing that we try to get in Decker as well, that there would be things they've said that you try and pick up on. It was eye-opening, basically, playing Her Story. And also, one of the ways it works is it won't show you enough videos, will it? The interface is stuck to giving you four results. So you put in a search term, you only get four videos back, and you need to refine that search term or add extra context to retrieve more videos. So that is basically the hiding mechanic.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Now, here's a question for both of you. As we said, Dr. Decker was released about a little bit over a month ago. How long were the two of you working on the game beforehand?
It was just over a year, probably 14 months, I think. We started developing the idea spring 2016, and then spent most of that summer writing, about 3 months writing it. What would you say, about
a month filming. Yeah.
And then
3 months editing. 3 months video editing.
And I remember we naively thought we were gonna get it out December.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case at all.
We realized the data was going to take a long time after doing we did a beta test with over 100 beta testers. We did two separate beta tests. Mm. And basically the game we thought we were going to deliver, nope. Beta testers wanted other stuff. So it ended up taking a lot longer, really, because one of the biggest things that we underestimated was that people want to see all the videos.
Yeah. So as you know, there's two sort of levels in the game with the traffic light system. There's the amber responses, which you have to find before you can progress, and then there's the green is if you found all the responses available for a character in that act. And a lot of people in beta wanted to go green. They wanted to see all the responses, even if that meant they were asking questions they wouldn't think of asking naturally themselves. Because we'd obviously, the way we'd planned it, we'd filmed responses for questions we thought people might want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously not everyone would think of asking. But we thought, oh, wouldn't it be fun if there was a response, if they said, oh, is so-and-so a zombie? Or, you know, it's kind of like an Easter egg mm-hmm. if they get a response for that. Yeah, a lot of beta testers wanted to find all of those, and they wanted us to put in hints for all of those so that they could find them.
We've learned some lessons, I can tell you, if we do another one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mainly it'll be not giving out, not letting you know when you found all the videos. Mm. That's the big one.
Ah.
Yeah. because that knowledge and the traffic light system we put in to kind of gamify it, really, to let you know about your progress, give you some idea of the progress. There always was how many responses you'd found on the menu screen. But those traffic lights were to be beaten then, I think. So people definitely wanted to go green if they could. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we did it again, we certainly wouldn't say how many videos it would take to go green. Essentially, amber would become green.
Okay. And that's all.
Everything else is Easter egg.
You're lucky if you find it, then you've done well.
And that is very interesting. As you two are no doubt aware, when it comes to people playing games, like any game in particular, if there is, like, if we see, like, oh, that we only did 65% of the game, there's always going to be people who will go for everything.
We thought we were being nice, really, putting all the hints and the traffic lights. And I think on the whole, people are kind of, they're obviously happy that they're getting to see all the videos if they want to see all the videos. But we do also get some criticism like, oh, the hint's complete non sequitur. I'd never have asked that. And we're thinking, yeah, no, I don't know. You wouldn't have asked it.
And it's always tricky trying to essentially educate the player on what's required versus what's optional. Because there are people, like we just said, that especially in like action or RPG based games where they'll see like some kind of optional, super impossible, very time consuming fight, and they'll think, oh, I'm supposed to do that. But being able to differentiate between something that you must do versus something that's only there for the most, you know, hardened of players can be very difficult.
Yeah. And you want to build in those things for, you obviously want to put things in the game for those different types of players. So you want to do the more casual experience for someone who wants to go through a million decker and just find the required responses and get the basic story. Mm-hmm. But have the other things available for people who want to sort of think harder about it. I mean, in our game, it's not so much about a difficulty performing a certain maneuver or, you know, killing a boss, mm-hmm. but perhaps putting two and two together and making five and asking a question about that. So it is quite difficult. And I think one of the things we didn't perhaps do so well was communicate that to the players. Someone said to us, didn't they, just before we released, oh, it would have been quite good if there was a tutorial.
And yes, we agree.
Oh, yeah. No, that probably would have been quite good.
No budget left now, but yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, there are help videos there, and we've been completely augmenting the notes and the hints and everything else as we can. We just released another patch where it basically italicizes subtitles. If you put the subtitle on, keywords to look for there. And all this is, they're in options, so they can be turned on or off or different combinations. But really, yeah, it's obviously on our shoulders that people, if people are having a not so great experience with the game, that we haven't told them what to do properly. Now, albeit it means they may have skipped the help video and not read anything we'd put in. So again, having something like a tutorial right at the beginning that you can't skip through, that is fun to play and learn at the same time, would definitely have helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's always that fine line between how much do you tell a player versus how much you let them figure things out on their own. And we have seen many developers struggle with that balance. Sometimes they go overboard and you're left with a tutorial that's just monotonous or very repetitive to play that the person just tunes out to. Or you leave them with basically like a map and say, you know, find this point somewhere and, you know, go out on your own. And then the player gets frustrated along those lines.
Yeah, it's really difficult because you don't want to just bombard them with information right up front. You kind of do want to, you want them to start playing, you know, as soon as possible and be able to get into the game. So it is tricky.
I think every patch we've released is like a slightly bigger hammer than the last one. So it's becoming less and less subtle with every patch. Steve, who develops it in California, he thinks there will eventually be a press to win button.
I mean, and if you think back to the you know, our first beta, those players had no hand holding at all.
No.
Really, because did we have hints in even for Amber then?
We actually had response forms for the beta, didn't we? And they were leaving feedback. And one of the beta testers said that they didn't like the hints and they didn't think there should be any in the game.
I think we'd be getting a lot more abuse now.
We'd be getting a lot of abuse. A lot more than we're getting.
Oh, yes. Now, I guess talking more about like writing, Dr. Decker, and for the folks listening, I just want to clarify that both of you wrote the screenplay for Dr. Decker, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess here's my next question. As we've said, writing a game like Dr. Decker or something along the lines of Her Story is different from a traditional video game where everything is basically told in a linear fashion. I guess for both of you, what were like some like the more interesting challenges you had when writing the dialogue or the screenplay for Dr. Decker?
We actually took some cues from Her Story on that one, I think, because in Her Story, questions you ask they don't reveal much information in the early part of the game, and you need to find more stuff to get to those kind of really juicy end videos. In Decker, we start from the outset. We thought we're going to have 5 acts, mm-hmm. So if we reveal anything too early, we basically can't, because you're in this 5-act structure. So at the end of act 1, you're going to know whatever it is we want you to know and know more, and then keep going for each act after that. So we weren't that worried about the you getting too far ahead too quickly. One of the problems that is difficult, though, when you write those kind of games is giving people lots of routes into essentially the same information. So like, you can have lots of root keywords that will get a response, which then take you to the same piece of information. And people won't necessarily go back to get those other keywords because they've already got to the end of the tree, as it were. So, that's definitely one of the problems. And also repeated use of the same keywords. If I talk to you about my my badger, you might then say, where does your badger live? So now we've got badger and badgers live, and it keeps going, it gets worse and worse. So trying to discern the different ways that people are going to ask questions or follow on questions for a particular topic meant those keywords got a bit chock-a-block by the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from my play of Dr. Hunter, I did run into some of those cases where it kind of felt like I was having trouble getting the right phrasing for the questions. Like, if I want to ask something more about Dr. Decker, like if I say Dr. Decker versus where did Dr. Decker go, it sometimes kept pulling the Dr. Decker keyword. Like sometimes trying to get that second or sometimes maybe even 3 keywords in a single sentence or single question kind of got a little bit tricky, I noticed.
What's happening there is that it doesn't have a response for, where does Dr. Decker go? So it says, well, I've got this response, but you've already seen it, for Decker. It's tricky. What we tried to do was direct players to things they could ask. But there are some questions that you might want to ask. I mean, and obviously you don't know what information is going to be available. So there is a bit of feeling about in the dark sometimes because you want to ask about Dr. Decker's family or something, and we don't have a response for that. So
it's a testament to the way the game looks and the interface, and you're seeing these people and you think they should really be able to answer any questions. I mean, we had criticism that they didn't know that they couldn't ask what age they were or where they lived. And again, we only had 1,600. We only had a record-breaking 1,600 plus responses, I should say. But obviously, most of the time, I think we've lulled people into a false sense of security that they can really ask anything they want, and that we'll have quickly Skype an actor in to respond to it. Whereas really, if they say hello, I have a badger, you need to ask about the badger. So it's not that simple for all of them, as you're saying. It does get a lot more complex, but it definitely looks a bit like AI but just doesn't respond like it. And that, again, that is what you touched on there, was balancing a bit, the keyword balancing. So we've gone through a process and back again, backwards and forwards, either what we call tightening or loosening a keyword. And that will mean if we think that you're going to ask about Decker's work, for example, we could either think, if you're not going to say anything else about Decker this act, we could just use Decker as the keyword. So that's been loosened. But if we think that maybe you'll get frustrated because you're going to ask about other Decker things, we might have to tighten that by adding another keyword and having Decker work. So now we've got one group of players who are complaining they can't find Decker work, and another group of players who are complaining that they asked if Decker likes golf, and he's come up with this response.
Yep, and again, it's one of those things, as I think you just talked about, Tim, that when you're looking at a game like Dr. Decker versus someone like Her Story, there's that illusion of reality. As you said earlier, in terms of like having the camera on the person, the conversation at the top, the player kind of sees this as being an actual conversation. But as we're all aware of, it is very much a text input interface, very similar to Her Story. And Her Story, again, it modeled it after like a 90s computer. So the illusion was kind of part of the aesthetics, I think, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah. And like you say, it does, when you feel like you're having a conversation with the person that sat there, you know, in front of you, facing you, and talking to you directly, if you can't get an answer to your question, it becomes more frustrating more quickly.
It's more personal rejection as opposed to you've put in a search criteria and you've got no results. Well, that's a normal database search, isn't it?
And like as we say, it also kind of breaks that immersion. Like your example from a few minutes ago, that if someone asks, you know, how old are you, and the person says, I don't know what you're talking about, it's like, wait a minute, something's not right here.
And there are obviously lots of questions which you can ask the patients, which they really should have answers for. You know, what, how many brothers and sisters do you have? What's your middle name? What's your favourite food? But obviously we couldn't film responses for them all. So, yeah, if you do ask questions that really they should be able to answer and they don't have an answer for you, like you say, it does break the immersion. But I think when people are playing the game, if they go into it with an open mind and they want to have fun with it, they do learn usually by the end of Act 1, oh, this is how the game wants me to play. It wants me to ask about these specific things they've said. And also, if you're willing to sort of type hint a lot, that especially with somebody, if you want to go green, for example, if you want to find all the responses, then yeah, you probably do need to use the hint function.
Oh yes,
we still think we called that the wrong thing, because obviously, you know, gamers don't want to touch hint, because that's, you've given up, haven't you? You've typed in, it's mercy, help me. Whereas really, some ruthless hinting at the beginning might kind of get you into the zone to help you push through all the five acts.
Yeah, you're saying we should have called it advice or something.
And it doesn't actually affect the outcome for you or the patients. And I was talking to Steve the other day saying, should we have really had should we have had achievements, Steam achievements for hints? Because it makes it look as if we're trying to keep you under a certain amount so you can get this achievement. I mean, there's an achievement for using no hints. And unless you're the developer, it's probably quite difficult to get that one.
Yeah, no, I can't get that one.
Now, going back to what you were just talking about in terms of the keywords themselves, when the two of you were writing up the screenplay for Dr. Decker, were you thinking along the lines of what keywords would activate what dialogue conversations, or did that come after the screenplay?
No, that was there right from the beginning. So in the docs that we'd have for each patient, we'd work on one patient at a time, and you'd write the response that you wanted to write, and then at the top of that, it would have a list of keywords that we felt would trigger it.
Did you? I wrote the keyword first, and then I put the response in. Is that what you did?
It's the same thing, because you're thinking, you know what the question's going to be, and then I write the response, and then I go back and put the keywords in.
It was pretty easy to do, actually, because you start the conversation with hello or whatever, and then they give a response, and you just look at some of the words in there, and you pick them out. That becomes the keyword for the next response, and so on and so forth.
It's threading, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. And I guess another question for both of you. In terms of the various characters in Dr. Decker, when you first started writing the screenplay, did you have like more people or more characters you wanted to write for? Or what was in the game was kind of everything that you originally intended?
There's more in the game than we originally intended, because we originally intended to have the six main characters, the five patients and your assistant. And then we added in the what we call the side quest patients, mm-hmm. Who just turn up for one session and have their own sort of separate storylines for a bit of interest. So it grew bigger.
Mm. But it was whiteboarded to begin with. So we just thought which patient, we thought we were going to have six patients because that's quite a good murder mystery number anyway. Mm-hmm. For doing kind of a random murder mystery. And I think we started with some really bad ones, like the obvious vampires and werewolves and things, and, you know, tried to work our way up from there. So I don't think there's anybody we missed out. But, yeah, if you mean is there another six lying around that we could knock up, probably not.
No. Took us long enough to write those ones.
Yeah.
Now, given both of your experiences with designing the tabletop murder mystery games, how did that like infer or help when coming up with the design or just like the scope of Dr. Decker?
Well, the tabletop ones are flexible, so they actually run for kind of 6 to 14 players, and they include 14 suspects. So Decker only included 6, so it's quite helpful. It was less than we'd normally have to write for. But really, yeah, in the tabletop versions, every suspect has different responses if they're innocent or guilty. And that is all it is. That is the magic that makes that kind of flexibility work. So as long as you have a murder already outlined, so you've got your means, motive, and opportunity for every character, like basic murder mystery stuff, as long as we kind of already timeline the murder, you can then just drop people in and out, you know, make them guilty or not. Mm. So we use that same philosophy in Decker, whereas if one of the characters is guilty, they'll have a certain set of responses, and if they're innocent, they'll have a different set. Decker's a little bit more sophisticated than the tabletop ones because we also use that to kind of corroborate with other characters. So the way Decker is coded is instead of it just being if you're innocent or guilty, it's also say this if that person's innocent or guilty as well. So we had quite a lot of crossover that we could do. And I guess that's helpful a little bit so that people can't just say, well, if Mariana says she was at the bar, she's guilty. And if she says she was in the bath, she's innocent type thing. Because you don't know whether that's really, she has changed the story, but is that to corroborate Bryce's story or something like that? So.
Or is that because of something you asked her before?
Or is that because, yeah, exactly, you said something else and we've changed the branch.
Because, of course, the characters ask you questions as well.
Which our favourite thing in Decker is the characters asking you questions. Yeah.
And your response can lead them down a different path.
Mm-hmm. And we apologise now for everyone having to type yes or no with those answers. Because most people miss that in the help, and they can't progress without it. Because you'll probably get onto this, there's no context in Decker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm glad the two of you brought that point regarding when the person asks you the question, and that kind of takes things down a different branch. Because that's another like very interesting touch for Dr. Decker. Again, compared to something like Her Story or other visual novel-driven games. Was that concept, and even the idea of having like the multiple endings, or the multiple, again, based on whether someone's innocent or guilty, was that something that you also wanted from the very beginning, or did that come up during development of Dr. Decker?
That was quite early, I think, that it was something, because we didn't just want to tell a story, and we did want to make a game. We knew we couldn't do it with 3D environments, so we had to think of what can we put in to make it more gamey. And I think the characters asking new questions and having that subtle branching in there. And it's not, the branching is not going to change the story completely. It does sometimes send them down a different path and they end up in a totally different place. But behind the scenes, the answers you give them affects their outcomes, and can give them a, we call them dark and darker endings, because no one really has a happy ending. I think maybe Nathan might. But yeah, dark and darker. So they, you know, you can help them and they'll end up in a better place. Or if you don't make very good choices for them, then they're going to end up in quite a very dark place. So that's one of the things. But I think it was quite early we did that, and the multiple endings as well, because we also got the different endings depending on who the murderer is in your game, and the sanity as well, sanity endings you've got as well. And that was,
yeah, I think the alignment came a little bit later. Sorry, shouldn't be saying things like that, like game tech. But the yeah, the dark and darker endings might have come a little bit later, because initially when we started the game and we thought it was actually going to be a straight murder mystery game, we immediately felt there wouldn't be enough content to keep players interested. So that is when we added the kind of supernatural elements to it, because we thought each of these characters should have an engaging story. And almost, don't tell anyone, the murder mystery is kind of secondary to the game. So although it is deeply built into it, and there is a definite ending, whether you've chosen the correct murderer or not, we were really more interested in keeping players engaged from those different stories that each of the players would have. So the dark and darker endings and the insanity endings, which are all cumulative, there's not a specific branch. I couldn't tell you, say this, and then you'll get this ending. They're cumulative through the game, and they can go up or down. They were things we used to keep people more interested in the game overall.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the game starts out, and its hook really is the murder mystery. Who killed Dr. Decker? But by the end, or by halfway through, we hope that you are perhaps more interested in the patience and trying to help them or not help them, and finding out what's going on with their stories, because there's a lot of weird stuff going on, obviously.
Oh, yes.
We were very worried that people were going to get bored really quickly with it.
I mean, especially as it's just basically people sitting on a couch.
I mean, we finished her story in about 40 minutes, maybe 45 minutes. And when I say, obviously, you've played her story, haven't you? Mm-hmm. So we didn't finish her story in 45 minutes. We just kind of gave up at that point and thought we knew all the whole story.
We thought, yeah, we'd seen.
And kind of Googled for everybody's YouTube versions of it.
But there was a worry and that because it's just people sitting on the couch talking to you, we didn't want the players to get bored. So we try to add a lot of twists and unexpected stuff, spooky stuff.
We knew it was going to last a lot longer than her story, basically, just because of the amount of content in there. And while she could drop out of her story pretty early on if you wanted to and still have a good experience, that wouldn't be the case with this game. So it had to kind of hook you in and keep you in. You've got to play several hours, haven't you, really, Dr. Decker, to get to an ending. With average, probably 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. And that's if you don't ask all the questions.
Yeah, if you go in amber, it's probably about, well, minimum of 4 at least, I think, 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, one question that I have, obviously for people who've played Dr. Decker, there is definitely, as the tagline for the game is, it definitely has some Lovecraftian themes to it, especially with some of the craziness that the various patients are suffering from. I guess, where did that inspiration come from in terms of, again, the more the crazy elements of the game?
Yes, probably my fault. I had a series of short scripts to do with a psychiatrist who had strange patients, and it was supposed to be kind of a Cthulhu Lovecraft theme. And I think part of that is because when I was a kid, I used to play Call of Cthulhu role playing game. And Steve, the guy who's programming, he reffed those games, and I don't know if you've ever looked at Call of Cthulhu role-playing game, but they have something in there. They have sanity points in Call of Cthulhu. And basically, the more stuff that you uncover, the crazier you get. And you basically lose your mind. But at the same time, it makes it easier for you to find out more about the Cthulhu mythos, as they call it. So it's a very interesting kind of role-playing mechanic, that this idea that the more you find out about something, that the crazier you can go. But it also helps you if you're needing to make those rolls against that kind of thing. So in Decker, unfortunately, there isn't really anywhere to go with it. You just go crazy. You don't really gain anything by becoming more and more disturbed, other than if you're lucky, you get the Cthulhu ending at the end.
Or you get to see more responses.
And you also, obviously,
you get more of the mythos.
Yeah, I think one reviewer said we've managed to gamify insanity by, the more videos you watch, the crazier you go. And that is essentially what happens, because, like I said, it's cumulative. So if you go through an orange playthrough, you can get out pretty unscathed. But if you dig too deep,
Nice.
I mean, we've always enjoyed weird stories like that anyway. And, it goes back to things like The X-Files, which also has had a resurgence. And, that weirdness, that things that go on beyond the veil.
I did a stint actually doing live TV directing for Sky TV, for a Sky TV channel over here. And it was called Edge Media. And everybody who came on that, it was about crop circles and all sorts of weirdness. So I probably
conspiracy theory.
Probably picked up a lot of stuff while I was doing that. And also, I mean, horror fans as well, just horror films. I did direct a horror film a few years ago, but I won't mention it. Nobody Google that. It helps us to get where we are. So
speak of it.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, I guess, moving on, or before we talk more about the FMV part of Dr. Decker, is there anything relating to the design of the game or writing it that we didn't touch on that either of you would like to talk about?
Silence.
If people are interested, most of the data in Decker is created in CSV files. So it's literally, there's a load of spreadsheets working there. And that in itself can make you go a bit mad, just looking at the spreadsheets and trying to balance numbers like that. But it's all very algebraic. It might not look like it from the front. It might look like we just knock something together, but there is method in our madness.
I guess here's one last question I was just thinking of. Regarding, again, like getting back to the use of the keywords and the text parser, as you said, you had about 100 people or had 100 beta tests of the game going through it and offering or suggesting different elements. In terms of, now you mentioned, of course, the addition of the hint system later in, but was there any like major differences in, I guess, the difficulty of playing Dr. Decker from the start of the game compared to where it is now, besides just the hint system?
Yeah, definitely. We added the stars, didn't we?
The traffic lights were traffic from beta. Lights.
Yeah.
The star system, we've got double star and single star responses to let you know which ones you need to play again to follow up leads to either continue or go green. That's from beta. The notes actually, I think, came after beta. So that's that wasn't there before.
No.
I think we added notes to make it a bit more interesting. Originally, the notes were just for us to mess with you. It was meant to be like a player input zone, and we would just occasionally add a note just to catch you off guard. And it's become a bit more like assisted help
for ask
people
about this.
Who won't type in. Yeah, so it turned a bit more like that. But I think the game was easier, to be honest, at beta, because all of the keywords mainly were pretty loose. They were pretty loose, so you could accidentally find a lot of stuff that you probably shouldn't really quickly.
But they probably got more more confused responses, more hodors.
Yeah, Hodor's. We use Game of Thrones names for a lot of our in-house stuff. So we've got, if you get a no response, that's, we call that a snow, because Jon Snow, you know nothing. And we also have Hodor. That's what, if you hit more than one keyword.
Yeah.
And Tommen's, in fact, is what we call the background videos, which is essentially somebody just lurking around in the background.
Ineffectively, yeah.
All right. I think with that, for my last, I guess, series of questions for tonight, I guess I want to talk a little bit more, ask both of you a little bit more about kind of setting up the actors, or more or less the FMV part of the game. And I guess the first question is, I know the answer to it, but I just want to ask to clarify, when you originally came up with Dr. Decker, was the intention there to be FMV driven, like her story, like right from the get-go?
Yes. Yeah, we wanted to make an FMV game because we've always loved FMV games. So it's kind of been this thing we would have quite fancied doing for many, many years, but never really thought we could do it.
We thought it'd be easier, to be fair. It turned out being a lot harder than we thought.
Massively.
And we know that we still, you know, we still not really hit the bar we wanted to, but it was still harder than we thought. I'll leave it at that.
It's that thing, if you'd known at the beginning how much work was going to be involved and how difficult it was going to be, we never would have started. So it was good that we thought it was going to be easier.
But yeah, her story is definitely one of the big catalysts for it. And again, it has the same kind of text entry system. Not the same, obviously. I mean, I'll get slapped from Sam Barlow saying that. But yeah, it's basically your Google box with video returns.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, as you're saying, in terms of the difficulty of setting up the FMV, when it came to, I guess, picking the actors and actresses to be in Dr. Decker, I guess, what was the process behind that?
We put out a casting call on a couple of the big networks over here, online network that these are. And a lot of the actors kind of, they've got their profiles and showreels already on these places. So you just put out your casting call and say what you're looking for. Nowadays, we used to go to London and then audition people face to face. Nowadays, it's much easier because the actors basically do what's called a self-tape.
Mm-hmm.
And you give them some dialogue, they will tape that, send it back to you. And we got to look at, you know, hundreds, literally hundreds of performances. So we were looking for people that could do it without laughing, really. You know, they needed to, you know, keep it.
Because there's acting and there's acting director camera, which is a different skill. And acting director camera. And also because there's no other actors in the scenes with them. They're acting on their own in those scenes. So that's kind of, there were definitely some people who could do it and some people who couldn't do it, who weren't as convincing. But the actors we've got, they all came across incredibly well in their auditions. And we feel very lucky to have found them, because time and time again, you know, in reviews we've got or from players, they praise the acting. They say they were so compelled and engaged with the characters, and that's to do with these actors who really pulled off the characters incredibly well.
But I mean, the self-tape was direct camera anyway, so we knew exactly what we were going to get. John Guiler, who was in Contradiction as Ryan Rand, he didn't audition. We didn't even ask him to begin with, because maybe he'd have had a much bigger role. He could probably have been one of the main characters. We didn't want to have that discussion with anybody, you know, about rates and contracts and points and things. So, fortunately, we kind of met up with John Guiler on Twitter. You know, he would just start responding to some of the stuff. Some of us jokingly saying, "What are you doing next weekend, John?" And, that kind of, evolved into a bit more of a discussion over email and things, and then we managed to get him in the game that way.
As one of the side quest patients, which was great as well for the game to say, "Hey, we've got this guy from Contradiction."
Yeah, I mean, you probably haven't played Contradiction. Have you played it?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, because I mean it is basically a video story, and all you mainly do is you click on questions basically, and then the main part of that game interface in terms of the mechanics is you put two questions together to try and spot a contradiction. But you can we watch that game, and there's contradictions in Decker. You can see people contradicting each other. What we didn't like about contradiction, and the only thing we didn't like, just in case anyone's watching, we loved playing contradiction, was that you couldn't drag the response from one character to another. So even though one's definitely contradicting what another player they're saying, you can't ever put them together. So that is something we sorted out with Decker. You can have one player say one thing, another player say another, and then you can call them both up on it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And going back to what the two you were saying a few minutes ago regarding acting in front of a camera versus acting in front of a person, that kind of is similar to what I've been feeling in terms of the more the stuff that I do with Game Wisdom with the vlogs I put out on a day-to-day basis, and how there really is that difference between talking to someone, as in like what we're doing right now, versus just talking to a camera when there is no visual or even just a conversation feedback that you have. And it really is about like you really need like different skill sets in terms of really nailing it for both fronts.
Yeah, well, I was directing, so I was laughing at them from behind the camera, giving those kind of prompts. That was rubbish, do it again. Yeah, those kind of things. So, but yeah, no, definitely, to carry it, some people just die in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where to look.
And there's no conversation for them to respond to, because obviously, although the questions are implied, the actors just had a script that literally had the keywords in mm-hmm. for the questions. We didn't write them proper questions. This is the question we think you're going to respond to. It was a series of keywords, and then they had a response. So they, you know, they had nothing to bounce off of in that respect.
They nailed pretty much 99% of it. Things like that, if they've got in the wrong context time from the question, then we'd have to retake it and say, no, you actually killed him, for example. they did it very, very quickly. When we say that we did the production in a month of the filming, every character was scheduled to come in for one day, and most of them managed to do it all in one day.
Yeah, and those that didn't, you know, it's because we had technical problems or environment problems.
Yeah, and I don't know, are you going to talk about the filming or not, really? The only thing I'd say about it is that we did end up having to get an auto cue halfway through just to stop the pain.
But there's a massive amount that they had to deliver and remember and, you know, perform convincingly.
Somebody did call it actor boot camp.
Yeah. So the auto cue helped, I think, to help them to relax as well and just, you know, I don't have to panic that I'm not going to remember it. I can just perform it. Even though a lot of them had obviously learned the lines and, you know, were delivering them.
It just
took that pressure off.
One of the main patients did their entire film through without the auto cue.
Nice.
So there's a competition for somebody. Can they work out which actor didn't use the auto cue?
Nice. I guess here's a question. In terms of the different actors and your scripts, did anyone actually do like any improvisation, or was it all just kept relatively to what you wanted from them?
They mostly stuck to the script. John Guiler ad-libbed a lot, ran from contradiction, came in and played Professor Warwick. And his performance is great. But the ad-libbing, the downside to that is we have to like then adjust all the subtitles to match what he says and not what we wrote.
But we didn't have to do that much. I mean, most people just, because they get that it was a keyword-based game, so if they were to accidentally miss stuff out, and again, we did do some retakes, if they'd missed out a keyword or they'd used a different word for that keyword.
Because obviously with the script saying, that was great, but actually you have to say, this instead of that.
I mean, the actress Ashlyn, who plays Mariana, she actually auditioned for the role of Jaya first. Oh. So we looked at that, and then said, could you have another go for, as Mariana? We think that you'd make a really good Mariana. And
she did.
Yeah, I think she's saying
a lot of people like Mariana.
Yeah. They've all done, I mean, they all did really, really well.
Mm. Here's, I guess, a semi-random question. The actual psychiatrist's office that the game majorly takes place in, I guess, how long did you guys think about in terms of, like, setting up how, like, the look of it when you were coming up with the design?
A long time. Yeah. There was a lot of back and forth on the couch to begin with.
Yeah, that couch was gone.
What couch do we buy? And then, obviously, deciding on the look of the set, painting the set, and deciding what's going to go in it and what isn't going to go in it. There was a lot of rearranging furniture and elements. And
3 weeks I spent changing the position of the pictures.
Moving a hat stand, yeah. Bit to the left, bit to the right.
It was all Photoshop to begin with. We Photoshopped the look to begin with, and then superimposed different props to see what we fancied. And then when we actually had it all physically there, That's when the moving started.
And lighting it as well. Obviously, you know, it doesn't look right until you've got things in place and then you start lighting it.
Yeah.
Because that's what gives it the ambiance, yeah. And the atmosphere.
We kind of knew we were only going to use the one set. To begin with, when we started filming, we actually had, some of the insanity endings at the very end are in different locations, and a couple of the main cast we were going to film in different locations for a couple of their sequences, but in the end we didn't have enough time. We knew we weren't going to get enough time. We knew we were going to have to film in one place, so we knew we had to take extra special care to make it look like they'd just thrown it together.
Yeah.
But it was also, it was intentional that most of the game would take place in that single office, because we wanted to create that feeling of not claustrophobia, but that you are here and you're stuck with your patients and you're going to have to
like that.
Work through their problems. And it's a little bit unnerving, the fact that you can't leave, go to a different room, look at something else. You know, you've got to sit there and deal with what they're throwing at you.
Yeah, it definitely plays into it, doesn't it? The claustrophobic feel.
Yeah.
As opposed to, having a massive mansion to roam around in.
Yep.
Which we couldn't afford.
Which we did consider. We did consider shooting it in a little mansion, you know, like a guest house, and taking it over. But again, when you've got control of the whole set, you can, if you need to reshoot things, it isn't as painful as trying to get everyone together at a location that may then not be available.
Yeah, and I would also say there's also that intimacy involved with having that single environment as well. It tends to become like a part or a character in the game or in the story as well, compared to compared to if like every actor had like a completely different environment, completely different places to go to, you would kind of lose that sense that everything is happening in this one enclosed area.
Yeah. And it's also that it puts you in this kind of crucible where nothing happens outside of these walls, or or you don't see what happens outside of this wall. So all you have is what they tell you. They go away, they come back for another session, and they tell you what's going on, but you only have their words, their word to depend on. So from the player's point of view, it sort of makes that more acute, I think. But we say that the real star of the game is the couch, obviously, because it's in every scene. No, not really.
But what you described there is basically there was a web series that became a TV series, which is called The Booth at the End. I don't know if you ever saw any of those. Yeah. And essentially, it was people kind of bartering with the devil over a diner booth.
And it didn't go anywhere
and
else.
You didn't get any other locations. You just had these characters coming in, saying something. he'd talk to them, tell them to do something, they'd go away and they'd come back next week. And that is, I mean, that's how those scripts developed. And kind of Decker happens the same. You talk to people, they say, shall I kill my cat? Shall I kill my cat? You give them the answer, they come back next week and tell you what's happened. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we've never said what the time gap is between acts.
Or the cat comes back.
Yeah. mm-hmm. Yeah. That isn't an actual spoiler for Decker, by the way. No pets were harmed.
I think another part, to kind of start to wrap things up, at least for this part, is that when you have the stories like this that are in like a single environment or just dealing with people, I think one thing that I really like is that it makes the story feel a lot more personable. It's not like if you don't do this, the world is going to end and everything gets destroyed. It's just that you're interacting with this set group of people and you're just, again, what you know about what's going on is only coming from them, in a sense.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, because that's one of the things you were talking to Cashton about, mm-hmm. I think, was the sort of the different levels of jeopardy, mm-hmm. in a way, is that you have games where, you know, everything is going to get destroyed if you don't do X, Y, Z. And then you have games which work on a much more personal level, where it's not really... and you perhaps you don't know what the consequences are going to be, but you know it matters to these people.
Yes.
Yes.
You can spend a lot of time with the game, though. You know, some of the worst, you know, worst playthroughs we've seen in terms of, you know, if we might look on Twitch and maybe somebody's just quit after 5 minutes. It's because they're trying to force it really quickly, as if the world was going to end if they didn't get the next response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, like as we said at the beginning, if you give players that, like the breadcrumbs to say, oh, there's so and so many number of responses, you will have people who will try to get everything like on their first go around.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We have since talked about removing all that and doing it this other way. And we think that we're just going to have to sit in history as it is now. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we think it stands up for itself where it is now. Lots of people have played it and enjoyed it. And if we removed the kind of green responses or made amber green, you'd have a different game.
Yes.
You'd have two people speaking about it having two totally different experiences.
Yeah. Well, this is the game we made. And that's fine. It's okay that it's not perfect.
No, well, we keep putting extra stuff in to try and assist people, yeah.
I guess to wrap up this section, probably move into our final set of questions. For people listening to this right now who are interested in the technical aspect or even just designing their own FMV game in the future, I guess, were there any unusual or unplanned challenges when it came to, I guess, filming the game that someone else may run into if they decide to do something along this line in the future?
I mean, if they know what they're doing with filming anyway, they'll be fine. Some of the normal things are obviously you need to keep the lighting consistent because it's supposed to take place over a session. And if the lighting moves around or the colours move around and it'll look weird, those kind of background shots when you've got a different kind of response video. Also, just the sheer volume, work out what you can do. If you physically aren't going to be able to get enough responses done in a day, then kind of spend more days on it in filming or kind of dial down what your idea is going to be.
Yeah, that's something we learned. I mean, we were quite over ambitious with what we attempted in terms of the volume of responses that we needed to film, and not just the responses but all the in-between bits, the backgrounds and the endings, and the Jay has got a lot of cut scenes as well.
Plus, any developer who's looking to do this, you need to deal with actors. Mm-hmm. And you know, our actors were all lovely, but they come in all shapes and sizes really. We bought a lot of the costumes and things obviously, and you know, some actors respond to things better than others, so we did really well, and I think we cast really well and the actors were really good. But I have worked on things where you could cast the wrong person and essentially you've killed the project. You need to recast or whatever.
One thing I will say though, I think that the difficulty in making a game that has film in it is obviously once you've done the filming, that is set in stone.
Yes.
You can't change their responses. And I think there were a few times when we were working on the data that we wished we could change their responses to make it easier to perhaps find some of those responses.
But you can edit them in post, and that's the other big thing, is that we filmed it all in 4K with a 4K camera, and then we did the edit. That's why the editing took 3 months. We did all the cuts after that
because the camera was fixed.
Because we were delivering in HD, so we could actually zoom around all over that image. We took a fixed shot of each of the patients there, and then we just zoomed in and made different cuts. So I think if we'd had to make those camera choices on the day and all those different setups, it would have taken like a month per character. So yeah, if you're thinking of doing something like that and you're filming, film is in the highest resolution you can, and then you'll be able to make those editing decisions before you have to deliver the game.
And those edits were another thing that sort of add interest to the people talking on a couch. The fact that you cut in, cut away, cut to the hands, do a pan, gave us a lot of choices to make, especially in some of the perhaps longer monologues that they've got. There's another thing we could use to try and ensure that players weren't getting bored.
Yeah. And it also takes up a lot of storage, obviously.
Yeah.
So make sure you've got a few hard drives lying around.
Yes. All right. I think with that, we'll move, I guess, into, I guess, a few final questions I have for both of you, and then we will say goodnight. So,
okay.
I guess the first one, and one I always like to ask developers on, is, I guess, what is next for both of you? Are you still, obviously, as I said, for those of you listening, we are recording this at the end of June. So, I guess, are you still working on Dr. Decker in terms of any kind of post-release support?
Constantly. We thought we'd just go on holiday when we did it with it, but apparently that's not the case. Yeah, now we've been hanging out in the Steam forums and stuff to help people who are stuck with things or if anyone's got any problems. And I think we've released four main patches now.
104 now.
We've actually released quite a few little interim keyword patches as well. So a lot of the we've actually added two new bits of functionality. Well, quite a lot of new functionality, but stuff that like we didn't deliver on the release day. And it wasn't because we didn't think that it shouldn't, because we didn't have time. It's because we didn't think it needed it. And we're still not entirely sure whether some of the changes we've done were needed. But if it helps just a few people enjoy the game a bit more, then it's worth doing.
Well, yeah, if you hear from players and they say, I'm getting stuck because of this, then we're trying to say, well, what can we do to make that a bit easier?
We're working on Linux support at the moment. It can already be compiled into Linux, and it should already run on there. And I know that somebody's had a look at that for us and said it's completely broken. So we need to take a look at that. And also multi-language, I think we're gonna put in. But we need to have a final cut at some point of the keywords before we do multi-language, because we don't want to keep rolling out loads and loads and loads of patches to everybody. So I think we're getting there, and hopefully that last patch that just went in yesterday, the one which kind of highlights subtitles for people to help them go orange or amber, sorry. We're not sure how much more we can do. We know that we could obviously add thousands more combinations of keywords, and pass that on to our grandchildren to do the same job. But at some point, we're going to have to call it so that we can do the multi-language and maybe go to other platforms with it.
Okay. I guess another question then, have the two of you decide like what your next big game project will be, or is it still too soon to say?
we're still bleeding.
It's too soon. And I just think you remember saying about 2 days after release, we are never doing this again.
Yeah.
Because the amount of time and effort is just unbelievable. And stress when you release the game, the stress of what are people going to say about it? Although they've said it, and being on call and checking the forums and checking Twitter and to make sure that you're putting out fires, basically. We didn't have many big fires, but being there to put out fires.
It's also taken up to now probably for us to get more of an idea of how it's generally been received, because you get a lot of early reviews, most of them from kind of the free Steam keys you give out. And you're not really sure that at that point, right at the beginning, whether the last year or so you've spent of your life, whether it's worth it or not.
Yes.
So.
But there are murmurings about the possibility of perhaps.
We have been talking in house about another FMV game at some point. Yeah.
But it is too early.
Yeah, we're not entirely sold on the text input system, or at least. We're not sure if we can lock it down enough to make it less of an issue for people, because it's such having an open text box is massively open to abuse. Mm-hmm. From our side and the player side, you know, there's so much you can do with it, so many things you can type into it. I don't mean executing Java code or anything like that, obviously, but just the possibilities are endless. Although having said that, we do think that open text entry for FMV games is a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right. I think with that, we're going to wrap things up. Again, like I said at the start, definitely congratulations for getting Dr. Decker out. And hopefully you two can go on a well-deserved vacation.
At some point.
Next year. Yeah.
Maybe by the time this cast goes off, I'll send it over and you two will be gone for like 2 or 3 months or something like that.
We'll be listening to it on a tropical beach.
Great. I guess my final question then for both of you is, for the fans listening, do you have any final thoughts or anything you would like to say?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for playing.
It's one thing I keep thinking, oh, we should put some kind of message out somewhere to say to everyone who has played the game, who has streamed the game, who's made videos about it.
Fan artwork. Podcasts
about it. There's been fan artwork. Yeah. It's just incredible. And that's been the best thing for us. When someone says, wow, what a ride, I had such fun playing the game.
We have loved watching people enjoy our game on Twitch, and
it's obviously very good for the
YouTube.
Ego.
and it isn't all like that. We've had quite a lot of negative feedback as well, so our heads haven't got too bloated or anything anywhere near that, which is why we really appreciate anybody who has enjoyed the game. We made the game for people to have fun with. We're not trying to hurt anyone. We're not trying to give people a lousy experience. The whole idea of this is and our company, really, we make games for people to have fun. So go and have fun with them and keep having fun and have as much fun as you can. Just because we say that we didn't intend people to play it a certain way, if you like it that way, keep doing it.
Awesome. And if the two of you ever need another actor for a future FMV game, definitely I would love to do something like this. Like I said, I don't know how well I would be, but that would definitely
be really good to get a lot of kind of different personalities in the gaming community to do different cameos for an FMV game, because it would be awesome to include everybody in it. Yeah.
Well, definitely keep me in mind. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch any of the vlogs I've done. I don't know, that would either be a stunning portfolio or just a instant red flag, but who knows? All right. I think with that, we are going to say goodnight. So, again, Tim, Linda, thank you so much for coming on. And again, best of luck with finishing up Dr. Decker support and whatever comes next from Deveki.
Thank you very much
for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Not a problem. So, for you folks listening to the cast, be sure to check out The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker, obviously currently available on Steam. Is it available on Humble or GOG or any other sites?
It is on Humble Store as well at the moment.
All right.
Yeah, it's just gone on Humble in the last week, I think, hasn't it? And, we'll probably get it on GOG at some point.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to know more about my thoughts on the game, you can find a link to my review and probably my video spotlight below. So, if you would like to support Game Wisdom and what I do, there are currently several options available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. If you are working on an indie game that you'd like me to take a look at, we currently have, or I'm currently allowing for open submissions, and you can find more information about that on their services. You can follow me on Twitter at GWBicer for updates throughout the day and my latest thoughts. For Patreon, you can find me on there under Game Wisdom or GWBicer. Your donations can help to keep things running and allow me to add more content for everyone to enjoy. And be sure to follow me on YouTube for daily videos on games and industry and game design related vlogs. So, again, Tim and Linda, thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully we can do something like this again in the future, ideally after a well-deserved break.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Not a problem. So, for you folks again listening, thanks for tuning in. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time.